Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Sunbury Motors, North 4th Street in Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now, from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
So, Chris, did you like that debate last half hour?
Oh, I thought it was wonderful. I enjoyed it.
What's an adult? I mean, it's amazing how society has, and this is the point Chris and I were trying to make. You're an adult. Well, sort of. Yeah. Except society has all sorts of levels of adulthood.
Yeah, it's a bit much.
I know. It's like, is there an absolute definition as to what an adult is? Oh, and by the way, if you're running farm equipment in Georgia, you can drive at 14.
Yeah. No,
so I don't know.
Certain states you can start driving at 15. I mean, it's insane. I mean, I know, I understand what you're saying with that, but I think once you're able to legally make money in this country, it's universally 18.
But you're allowed to make money in this country as a child actor, for example, in Hollywood.
Yeah, but you can only make certain amount of hours and whatever. I think by the time you're 18, it should be unquestionable, no matter what. And I understand what you're saying, scholarships and books and all that. I mean, there's so many levels to this; it's ridiculous.
I mean, that's why it's like this. You know, to me, I'm absolutely in favor of image and likeness because, look, if you're a school NCAA, you're an NCAA school. Right, FBS, FCS, whatever it may be, right? This is a way around you not paying them.
Yeah, totally. This is a get out of jail free card right here.
This is, let's take advantage of the capitalistic system where your value, like you're talking about Saquon Barkley, his value, or Trace McSorley, his value, versus the third team offensive tackle or the third string point guard. Right? Well, let's face it. I mean, yeah, everybody's valuable. I don't want to say that people aren't valuable.
No, of course. But again, think about the perfect example of who this really helps, this type of law, would be a player like Matt Leinart, who went to the NFL and didn't make a ton of money because he just wasn't that good. Or Trace McSorley is also another one, where he was a superstar at Penn State. But he will not be a superstar in the NFL. He might be a decent player. He might be a good backup quarterback. But his likeness doesn't mean crud to the NFL at the end of the day. But in the state of Pennsylvania, he probably would have made a killing doing ads for local whatever. You know what I mean?
Right.
Anything
in the
state.
I hear you. I believe me. I hear you. And I have one that's been in favor, as you know, of image and likeness.
Of course.
My only point is, okay, all right, now you got to figure out how do you do this. Chris Elio does a restaurant advertisement. Okay, are you allowed to have the money now, or is it going to a trust fund? Is it tied to conditions?
And are you allowed to have an agent down now at that point to kind of navigate these things? And yeah, no, I can see where you're going with that. That it has to be worked out. It can't just be like, okay, let's do it.
Right, and that was my point about the transfer portal. We're doing it. Like everyone's like, well, wait a minute, what are the rules here?
What are we doing?
Right. Yeah, what are we doing?
We're
That's
doing
the
it.
Other one.
What is it we're doing?
We're doing. Okay, what are we doing now? Well, give me one more time. Okay, give me one more time here. We're doing what and how?
What is it we're doing? All right.
I'll get back to you on that. All right, time now for our play-by-play call of the day.
3-0. Swing and a drive to center field. Steep, back goes Conforto. He takes a look. That ball is gone. Goodbye. Into the hedges. Over the 401-foot side at center field. Mike Elfranco. A bullet. It's a two-run home run. It's his 10th home run of the season. And the Phillies are back on top. It's 7-6.
All well in Philadelphia now. They're winning again. They beat Chris Elio's Mets.
Yes, they never looked back from that point forward. It just got ugly.
1-13-7. All right. Time now to work our way toward the gated community in the West. And to bring in Neil Coulon from USA Today. Talk about the NFL. Hello, Neil. How are you? Great to have you with us.
As always, it's great to be here. Thanks for having me.
We were talking a lot about money. You were the first person we thought of. All right.
Naturally.
I mean,
that's
really.
How it works.
I hope everything's going well in the gated community.
Oh, it is. We're having some problems with the riffraff around town today, but otherwise the pool is clean and my Bloody Mary is exactly how I like it.
You don't mean them, do you? No. Riffraff.
I walked into that.
Yeah. Okay. I actually want to start with more of a big picture topic today. Al Riveron, the head of officiating in the NFL, led a media summit that took place, I think it was out west. And Rich Eisen, by the way, wrote about this on NBC Sports because he was Peter King's on vacation, so everybody's been taking turns. And they were showing, obviously, the Saints-Rams play. But then they showed the Chargers-Chiefs game that had that incredible scintillating finish. We're on the road. The Chargers came back, scored, hit the two-point conversion, and won. And according to Riveron, the Chargers' touchdown, if it were challenged, would not have counted because of a push-off. Are we opening a can of worms, or are you on the same page as Al Riveron?
You know, instead of talking to Al Riveron about it, I'd really like to talk to the members of the 1972 U.S. men's basketball team, how much they enjoy outside interference.
Oh, I have. I've talked to Doug Collins about it.
Is this not exactly that? They're allowing that. And I'm not trying to make a dramatic point. I just mean from a literal perspective, what they're saying is that situation is perfectly fine. Look what happened there. I mean, at what point do you really want to take complete control out of the hands of the officials on the field? That is going to create more problems than it's going to solve. Let's be honest. We are not going to see what happened in the Saints-Rams NFC Championship game again. That it just isn't going to happen because it barely ever happened before that. The odds of that happening, odds isn't even the right term. It's the fact that something like that did happen, but closing the barn door after the horses escape doesn't accomplish anything. That's the whole point of the saying, you know.
Right.
Making rules to protect a situation that just flat out doesn't happen is, one, completely asinine, and two, so NFL, it just makes me, you know, dizzy. I mean, there's really no reason for them to be going to the lengths that they're going, but they're going to anyway because they think they have some kind of massive public relations problem. Yes, it was a bad look. Your issue is with the official on the field at that particular moment, not with how the game is officiated. There's no reason to do that because, frankly, nobody's going to miss that call again. It was that bad. I understand it was bad. It wasn't a good look for the NFL.
No.
Nobody wants to see that happening, but creating a major rule that affects all 32 teams, not just two of the 32 teams, in one game, for every playoff game, you're going to create more controversy by trying to fix controversy that you can't anymore. It's over. It's done. Trying to prevent something that doesn't happen is ridiculous. There's no reason to do it. I don't want to hear Al Riveron talk about the matter. I really don't.
They do say it's, for the moment, it's a one-year rule. It's not permanent, but it's 1 year. I think they're going to rue the day they did this.
Yeah, so they don't even believe in it enough to say we're going to do this permanently moving forward. If that doesn't show you that the political happenings and comings and goings within the NFL are so rampantly out of control and they don't even understand what they're trying to do, they're putting time limits on rules. What is the point of that? If it's not enough to say we need to do this permanently going forward, maybe you should think about not doing it. You're trying to prevent something that has already happened. Okay? Think about that. That is, from a logical perspective, exactly what they're doing. You don't need to create a rule for this. You really don't. Just make your officials, you know, watch the play in front of them, which I hope that you do on a daily basis. Calls get missed. I'm not letting the official off the hook. Not going to put 100% of the blame on the official either. Bad calls happen. Nobody is going to think that that wasn't a completely blown call, okay? Nobody thinks that. But you're not gaining anything by trying to prevent the same thing from happening again in the future. But you are opening up the door for even more controversy because now in Riveron's NFL, in his interpretation of it, every call that's made is arbitrary. Except for his, up in the booth.
Yes.
That's what happened to the 1972 Olympics. That's a black eye to this day that
right.
still shouldn't have happened. The officials are paid to do a job. You have to let them do the job. You can't pull rank on them in the middle of the game, okay? You do that, you will create more of a problem, whether it should happen or it shouldn't happen. you have to make the line stop with the officials to say, at the very least, 80% of the weight of this call is going with the person who saw it in real time right in front of them and are paid to make this call. You can't let them off the hook. You can't try to make their jobs easier. You have to implement rules, and you have to trust that this is ultimately a subjective process. There's only so much they're going to be able to do. Make them the best that you can make them and accept the results.
Right. And there were two officials on that play. They both missed it. Well, that happens. I mean, you and I can go through the litany of missed calls over the years that may have swung a game one way or the other. But to me, it opens the door, say they keep it. It now opens the door to the L.A. Chargers are playing the Steelers. It's obvious the right tackle moves before the play. And they scored a touchdown in that play. Are you now going to be allowed to challenge that?
Yep, and that's exactly the problem with this, and that's exactly what they were trying to avoid when they first started dealing with instant replay. They did not want a situation where everything can be called because, look, in my opinion, the right tackle moved probably three or four times in that game.
Yes.
We find out after the game that multiple teams have said that about the Chargers in general. It just seems to be a point of strategy for them. That's what they try to do.
Yes.
The officials let them get away with it for one reason or another. I don't think that they should be able to do that, but I also don't think that that needs to be reviewed to that level, because when you do that, there are probably 9 billion different things you could look at, and the NFL becomes nothing more than a game of what about officiating, coming mostly from the fans who are emotionally invested in the outcome of the game. If he missed the call, he missed the call. Fans are going to be upset about that. I get it. But the goal here is to make the officials see as much as they possibly can. But the reality of society is the criminal is always ahead of the cop. The cop doesn't know what to enforce until somebody is breaking that rule. So in reality, what you really have is an opportunity to say, the officials are being paid to watch these things. This is happening more often than something else. We need to crack down on this. The NBA does that all the time.
Yes.
The NBA has a report after the game that, in the interest of full transparency, points out things that the league office disagreed with.
Yep.
To me, that's far more appropriate. If you're saying we acknowledge that this error happened, we are holding them accountable to this, we're going to talk about it, but we control this process, not the fans. Okay, not the angry, emotional mob after a game. We control the process, so we're going to show you what we think about this, and to very impressive detail. I mean, they're not messing around. They don't just look on Twitter to say fans were upset about this, so we're going to talk about this. They are keeping their own set of data on it. They are making their own observations, things that they feel should have been called this way, and they are releasing that to the media to report about.
Right.
That is a league that is taking officiating, subjective or otherwise, as part of the game itself. And that's really what it is. These are mistakes, according to the league. Okay, the NBA is saying these things should have been called or not should have been called. Here's why. This is when they happened. This was the score. That holds everybody accountable to what's going on. It isn't to say that the league is right. Ultimately, they are in charge. But they're saying that we have issues with these things. And the implication is we're going to deal with it because we're exposing the NBA officials to say, we disagree with this. This should not have been called, or this should have been called. The NFL could do the same thing. They just won't. Instead, they create year-long rules to test something out that, frankly, doesn't matter unless the situation comes up, and in which case, odds are incredibly good you're going against everything that you stand for heading into the game by changing the call. So really, what is this rule doing? It's backing you into your own corner. For the life of me, I can't understand what they think is going to be gained out of this, except preventing a horrendous no call that should have been made. Everybody can agree that it should have been made. So
right.
What's the value in trying to change this after the fact? You're not going to be able to do it.
Who had
the
ball?
Make the call, and you won't have the problem. How's that? I mean, this isn't that hard.
Who had the ball first in overtime and threw an interception?
I believe that was the Saints.
At home.
So they had a chance to win the game. They had a chance multiple times to win the game. Game went into overtime. Both teams had a lot of times to win the game.
Yeah.
In the end, it stains what was, in my opinion, a very entertaining game.
Yes.
I really enjoyed watching that game.
Yeah.
It puts a black hole in something, and I totally understand where Saints fans are coming from. It was a terrible call.
Sure, it's an awful call. I mean, it's absolutely wrong. But
it also gave you the ball at the 3-yard line. It didn't take 7 points off the board. Okay, you're also going up against the best offense in the NFL. There's no guarantee here. It's no different. This was my same argument about the Jesse James catch against the Patriots in the 2017 season. That doesn't guarantee anything. There's no way that game was over. You can't tell me Tom Brady with two timeouts in a minute is going to have a problem scoring against the Steelers' defense, especially not when Gronkowski had put 90 yards on him in the last three drives. They were going to make it competitive. They always do. They're a good team. The call, in my opinion, that the rule interpretation versus what it should have been, it is a different matter. But officiating cannot be held responsible for the entire outcome of a game. And suggesting that they can is the thought process behind implementing one-off rules to try to prevent themselves from having a similar situation in the future. You pay them to be as right as humanly possible. You pay them to know the rule book backwards and forwards. They do, whether fans like this or not, a great job of that. There are situations that you get into where there's going to be a problem. Replay can't save you from anything. At some point, you have to acknowledge the fact that it's a subjective game. This call was missed. The NFL is not going to look worse by saying, you missed this call. I think fans would be perfectly fine with that, top to bottom, if they would do that more often. It also holds officials accountable enough, maybe that, you know, they're going to be better at their jobs. I don't know. Because to me, that was really more of a performance issue than anything else. There's no way that you should have missed that. He did, and life goes on. But that call, it doesn't happen that egregiously very often at all. It rarely ever does. Certainly not in those moments. We don't talk about the officiating at Super Bowls very often unless you're in Seattle. So overall, you don't have a problem unless you're creating one, which is exactly what this rule is going to end up doing.
It seems like every league, whether it's the NHL, Major League Baseball, and the NFL, is going to a centralized location to help on calls. How do you feel about that? That instead of having people that are actually in the building, and may have a feel for what's in front of them?
I think it's probably twofold, depending on which side of this coin that you're on. I think, one, what they're worried about in some circles is the idea that the official who's there, who has to make the call itself, is going to be influenced by the environment that he or she is in when they're making those calls. And I can see some rationality behind that. I can understand that, because it kind of beats the punch of people then complaining about that. Well, you know, you make all these calls for the home team because they're there and they're going to yell at you when you make it. It takes the pressure off the official at that point. But on the other hand, you're asking somebody who is not involved in the game, who may or may not have, exactly as you put it, the feel for the game to that point. Because let's be honest, there are a lot of very subjective rules in the NFL. There are objective ways to define them, but the implementation of that is going to be different every single time. Pass interference can be a lot of different things. They can define that specifically, but when you're in a game where you've called this arm bar before, but you didn't call it later on, that's right, when the officials really get into trouble. Making sure that it's consistent, that to me, that context is not going to be captured as well in a booth, in the arena, on TV, whatever, as it will for the guys who are actually on the field. And if you've been on the field to watch an NFL game, you know what I mean. It's a completely different world if you're up there inside of it.
No question.
You believe the difference, watching it on TV, being right in the heat of the action. So this goes back to my original point. You're paying the officials to call the game. You really should let them call the game, for better or worse, just because you have to be consistent with something here. You can't continue to jump through all these little different variations of things. Call the game. Accept the consequences of a subjective process by humans. It's going to happen. Strive to be better. Be transparent about what you're doing, but just accept the fact that this is going to happen. It's not like fewer people turned into the Super Bowl the following week because the Saints didn't win because of a bad call, okay? That didn't happen. It does look bad, you're right, but the issue here is with the official, not with the process. You can't overhaul everything and change everything around and make what's essentially a borderline strategic issue for coaches now out of something that rarely ever happens. You know, you can't do that because one team really got the poor end of the stick out of something that really shouldn't have happened to begin with. You're not going to be able to really fully prevent that from happening. And you're going to create, though, far more controversy than you wanted to get into.
Well, this has become my issue with it. I feel like starting with whomever it was, he's with Fox now, and then going to Al Riveron, that they've actually, instead of trying to correct the egregious mistake along the way. In other words, he scored, didn't score, ball hit the pylon, didn't, you know, things like that. He stepped out of bounds. They're trying to make the game perfect. You can't do it.
No, you can't. And that's to me, that's what it comes down to. The pursuit of perfection sounds really nice in a boardroom speech or on a Hallmark card. It's silly in reality, especially when you're talking about something where they are phenomenal at what they do. Based on objective grading, they're 98, 99% of the time correct.
Yes.
If you are overhauling regulation to achieve this mythical 1% to 2%, you're ridiculous. You're absolutely ridiculous. That's a high rate of adherence to a set of rules that are often very fluid, and it happened in lightning fast time in a chaotic situation. The fact that they get that much of it correct, even though they miss things like a Chargers tackle rocking back ever so slightly enough that it was noticeable and it should have been called,
right,
that didn't affect the play. You know, come on. The play was stupid to begin with. That didn't help. It should have been flagged dead. Maybe there was a player or two that thought that was going to happen. That's on the defense. That's not on the official. They have to continue to play regardless. They're taught to do that at the youngest of ages. So to me, the excuse is there, but it really is not something that should go beyond tell the official to call that. Get with everybody and say, put it on film and say, this happens a lot. We need to do something about it. We can't let them continue to get away with that because it's disruptive. Fans notice this stuff. It ruins the integrity of the game. It's not the play overall. It's something from a higher level perspective you have to do something about.
Well, as somebody who does quarterback club and hoops club around here often enough, I think I've hit on a topic that many people love to talk about. All right, so appreciate the time as always, Neil, and at some point we would like to be invited to the gated community.
Absolutely. You guys can come out whenever. Just bring two forms of ID and probably a blood and urine sample. You'll be able to get in.
Neil, thanks so much. Have a great one.
Thanks, guys. We'll talk to you.
Neil Coulong, USA Today. We'll come back with more in a moment on News Radio 1070 WKOK, brought to you by our great friends at Sunbury Motors. When it comes to car buying, there's the other guy's way, and then there's the SMC way. The other guys force you into a vehicle you really don't want. The Sunbury Motors way lets you take the time you need to browse, ask questions, and take the test drive and think on it. For over 100 years, the Mertz family and all their employees have made your experience the most pleasant one you'll ever have. The other guys won't offer you the best price for your trade, no matter how much they say they will. The SMC way is their promise to provide you with the most money the market shows your vehicle is worth. The SMC way is to offer you all applicable factory rebates on new vehicles and generous discounts. Looking for a pre-owned vehicle? The SMC way checks each vehicle in a 200-mile radius to determine the lowest price, then beat it. It's the lowest price promise, just part of the SMC way. The choice is up to you. The other guy's way or the SMC way? The SMC way wins every time. Sunbury Motors Company in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza, Sunbury, and at sunburymotors.com. Selling more cars and satisfying more customers for over 100 years.
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Best product, best staff, sales staff. Best service department, all at Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. It's been an interesting hour, talking about a lot of different topics. Neil Coulong joining us previous half hour. Then before that, we were talking about the bill attempting to advance in the California legislature when it comes to image and likeness for student athletes. And the NCAA at the moment balking. Part of the NCAA balking at it is they're trying to tell the California legislature that, quote, we're working on it. The California legislature is sitting there saying, yeah, you're working on it, but maybe not at the speed we want. So that's what they're debating out there. We were talking about the levels of, you know, what's an adult? And the law brings with it all different levels. I'll go back, Chris, when I was in high school.
Way back.
Way back when.
We're going way back when. Let's jump in the time machine.
I was actually in high school after Neil Armstrong walked in the moon.
All right.
With Buzz Aldrin.
That's
okay?
good. Slightly before I was born. All right, cool.
But the drinking age in Connecticut was 18.
Wow.
Was 18 years old.
Shocking.
Meanwhile,
3 years makes a huge difference.
Meanwhile, in Massachusetts, because again, each state had its own law. So it had been 21. They dropped it to 18. Massachusetts was 19.
Why?
Now, I have to ask Massachusetts.
That's what I'm saying. Why?
Maybe it's the assurance that you're at a high school. I don't know what the deal was. Okay. But, of course, I lived on a border town, Connecticut, Massachusetts. So, naturally, there are a lot of, quote, kids from Massachusetts flying over the border.
Yep,
to
I'm sure.
To Connecticut. Right? And same story for Pennsylvania, I think, has always been 21. I don't think Pennsylvania has ever deviated from 21. But I believe New York was 18 or 19.
Now, I grew up in New York. It was 21 ever since I've been a kid. So,
but I'm going back to when I was.
Right.
I think New York was 18, maybe 19, but I think it was 18. You had a lot of people in northern Pennsylvania crossing the line, kids, to get beer. Now, why is it 21 for everybody? Well, each state can pick a number. If you want to make it 16, 20, whatever you want to, you can pick a number. But if it's not 21 or it's under 21, if it's under 21, this is what you forfeit. The federal government has tied highway funding to the drinking age of 21 and 0.08 as the legal limit. Now, you can forfeit your federal highway money, and you can pick whatever age you want, but you are forfeiting your federal highway money. Now, when's the last time any state forfeited money that was being given to them?
Right. Like, why would they do that?
So let's look at that incredible track record. Oh, that's right. That's 100%. That's absolute. They'll take it every single
time. But, yeah, but that's what I mean. Like, when you're talking about this argument, it's so arbitrary. Like, you can... Right. I almost picture the states before the federal government stepped in and said, this is what it needs to be. Like, they're at a town hall meeting in whatever the capital is for whatever state, and they're like, picking numbers out of a ping pong ball, like a lottery, and be like, oh, the legal drinking age is 19 this year. It's so arbitrary.
Well,
it's ridiculous.
Well, again, let's take 18. Let's go back to 18. So when I was in high school. So when I was in high school, I was 18 years old. And the thought process was, and again, we were just, at that point, we had just come out of the Vietnam War. So you had 18-year-olds that could be drafted. So that was part of the thought process of, well, hey, let's make it 18. I mean, if you're 18 years old, you can be drafted, go in the military.
Yeah. You need a drink that day.
Yeah, right. Exactly. Right. But I think that was part of the thought process. You know, driving a vehicle is one thing. Okay. Now, in this state, even though it's 16, you can't drive until at minimum 16 and a half.
Right.
I mean,
you have
to have six months of training.
Right.
When I was growing up, you were allowed to get your license 30 days after your birthday. You know, if you applied for it on your birthday, you get your license and go for it and take the test at 16 years and 1 month.
Right.
Now in this state, it's you have to have a minimum of 6 months of training.
In New York,
I know. I have patiently sat in that passenger seat. Thinking to myself, don't go too far left, don't go too far right. Meanwhile, acting with the calm facade of like, oh, yeah, you're fine.
In New York in the mid-90s, it was you could get your learner's permit at 16, and if you completed a driver's education course, like a full course, by the age of 17, you can get a full license by the age of 17. So that's what I did. Like the day after my 17th birthday, I had like full license. But you had to complete that. Right. If you didn't complete that driver's course, then you had to wait till you were 18.
This is, and I think, and that just shows you that these become states' rights issues.
Yeah.
But you say, hey, 18, they're an adult.
Well, not completely in the eyes of the layers of the law. Yes, you're an adult to drive. Yes, you're an adult to go into the military. Yes, you're an adult allowed to buy a pack of smokes. Get a drink? No, can't.
But again, all those things are arbitrary. And I can't help but state that, you know, a child actor, you brought it up earlier, or maybe yes, we were talking about that off the air, a child actor would get compensated for his likeness, his or her likeness. So that's right. The thing, and then it comes up, the compensation is a scholarship, and then it goes so many ways, and I think the bottom line here is, like, because, you know, we can have that argument, and believe me, politicians will have that argument, or anybody who is trying to not spend money, like the NCAA, who's trying to pocket as much money as humanly possible, they will make that argument all day. But the bottom line is how does paying a player for their likeness and their signature hurt the NCAA at all? I can't imagine that it actually will at all. Like, especially like you said, no, it kind of gives them a get-out-of-jail-free card.
Right. Financially, somebody else is picking up the tab. The universities don't. Look, because when you look at, let's take Penn State. Let's take the money part of it. I think they've talked about being in the black, $5 to $10 million, somewhere in that range. In a lot of ways, that's a rainy day fund. Something happens to Beaver Stadium, you need to be able to have a fund to go to take care of it, or something happens at the Jordans, whatever. Okay? Something happens at the softball field where you need the money. That's your rainy day fund. So you have to make sure you maintain that. So they aren't out there turning all these awesome profits because, yeah, is football making awesome profits? Yes. I remember, have you ever watched the movie, Chris, It's a Wonderful Life?
I have.
Okay. There's a scene in when Jimmy Stewart marries Donna Reed, okay? And they're going to be going on their honeymoon, and, of course, they got all that money, you know, from all the cards and all the gifts. And she says, oh, I feel like a bootlegger's wife. And they're going past the building and loan. And in the building and loan, Ernie, the cab driver, says, boy, he says, I've never seen a run on a bank before, but that sure does look like one. And George's like, oh, boy. So in the pouring rain, he gets out of the cab, and she says, oh, don't go. And he says, no, let me make sure everything's all right. He goes in there, and the doors are locked. So he unlocks the doors, and he lets everybody in. And now everybody's there and they want their money. I want my $286. He says, I can give you a loan or whatever. He says, no, I want my $286 and close my account. He says, well, no. He says, well, I put my money in here. He says, well, that isn't quite how it works. There isn't $286 sitting in the vault. He says, because, you know, the money that you put in here, right, is going into Alice's home, is going into Bob's home. It's all working for everybody. So why do I tell that story? Well, that's how intercollegiate athletics works. Yeah, football brings in all this money, but it goes into the two soccer programs. It goes into the wrestling program. It goes into the softball program. Men's basketball goes into its program, but it goes into the women's basketball program. It goes into help out men's volleyball. So that's how intercollegiate athletics financially works. That's why you don't have like, oh, this, we are so awash in cash, the expenses are high, and when you're carrying, in Penn State's case, 31 sports, 28 of which cannot balance its budget. Men's hockey makes a slight profit. Okay, so we got to make sure that that's mentioned. The other 28 don't. Right? And I know it's almost impossible for wrestling fans to believe that they don't make money, right? I go every single time. They're sold out. Okay, that's fine. I'm glad you believe that, but I've seen the numbers. It's not even remotely true. And it's a case of TV contracts, radio contracts, corporate sponsorships, things like that, which is the standard at every, but again, so all this quote money coming in and all the money they're making off your image and likeness, you talk about this showing them on TV, Well, believe me, Zion Williamson is worth exponentially more now without dribbling one time in the NBA because he played at Duke than he would have if he took off the year and went to Europe to play professionally.
Yeah, but why would he do that? He wouldn't have done that. He probably would have been drafted anyway. Like somebody
except Zion Williamson, if he would have been the first overall pick.
He might have been. LeBron James, Kobe Bryant, like these players didn't play in the NBA. I mean in college, right. Kevin Garnett. Like
but again, same story. Where did they play? They played at least in American high schools and were recognized for it. Right now the option is to go overseas. Like Emmanuel Mudiay was the 14th overall pick in the draft. He played a year in China. He did not go to SMU.
Let me ask you this. Right?
So Zion Williamson comes in, and because he played 1 year at Duke and was exposed, as you pointed out correctly, exposed on TV all the time, even just warming up, his value now is exponential compared to I played a year professionally in Europe. Giannis is the MVP now. Giannis is like, oh, he's the big thing. Giannis is also in his sixth year. He's going to play his seventh year in the league coming up.
Right.
It took him a long time to get this recognition.
Right, but let me ask you this, and this just popped into my head, and I honestly don't know. So
I can't wait.
So LeBron James in high school is a high school kid who is phenomenal, like LeBron James, allowed to accept money for an autograph?
No.
He's not?
No. No,
that's against like the high school rules or whatever the high school leagues are.
Kid. That makes you ineligible to go to college.
So it's still the NCAA that's dictating that.
Yes.
So like in other words, like so I was like, I don't know, I don't know if I want to label myself a star, but I was a very good ice hockey player in high school. I went to college, but like let's say somebody approached me in high school and said, hey, you know, let's take a picture of you. You're like the next big star at CW Post on Long Island. So are you going to be going to school, blah, blah, blah. And like I sell a picture of myself or I sign a puck or something like that. I could be in violation and like not go to college after that and not be eligible?
No, they probably would suspend you for a game or two games. In other words, you know, that would be, quote, the penalty you would pay for doing that.
So like an advance.
Even though, right. So in other words, that's probably what they would do. I mean, they wouldn't say no, you know, unless you got like $1 million from 99 Restaurant. I mean, right. Try to be reasonable about it. That's why this part about image and likeness, part of that happens to be the ability to go to an autograph show. You know, and you can sit there and do a signing for a couple of hours and get paid to do it.
Right.
And that would be allowed on the high school level as well. So, I mean, they've got to be able to, you know, on many different levels, allow certain things to happen because, I mean, I'm completely with you. To me, it allows the student athlete, high school or college, to go out and get a few dollars here and there. Mm-hmm. On their own as an individual, and it takes it off the table where the athletic department or the university doesn't have to do it.
And it also would help. It would help a lesser athlete, believe it or not. I say lesser only because I can't think of a better word. But maybe a less prominent star, such as like we said before, Trace McSorley, who could have made a little bit more money.
He would have done very well here.
Yeah,
I think that he could have done well. And again, when you look at, let's just take Penn State, realistically, you're talking 800 student athletes that are on scholarship. Not all of them are on full scholarship, obviously. So many of the other sports, I mean, wrestling is a perfect example. I just mentioned wrestling. Well, you get 9.9 scholarships for the whole team. Okay. Last I checked, that you run 10 guys out there. So that means it is an absolute lock guarantee that not everybody that you're running out there that day is on full scholarship. You're saying, why is it 9.9? You know, I finally, a few years ago, asked that. Why is it 9.9? How'd you come up with that? Years ago, they rolled back all scholarships by 10%. Wrestling had been in 11. So what's 10% of 11? 1.1. That's why it's 9.9. That's how they got to it. You're like, really? Yep.
But I mean, that's another. Right. I'm sorry. Right. Go ahead.
Right, no, so you got 9.9 scholarships. So you got maybe a few guys that are on full, but everybody else is on partials. So now you're on a full scholarship to Penn State in the wrestling program. They're probably on the wrestling program. Nickel could have made money, no doubt.
Well, that's what I'm saying. Like, there's a mega star. There was a mega star.
Right, right. Nolf could have, you know, as an NCAA champion. Rutherford could have, no question.
And they're not going to make money anywhere else unless they become pro, like WWE stars.
Now, if they're the same wrestlers at, say, Indiana, my guess is no. But because they are Penn State wrestlers and because of the appetite for wrestling here, they can. Now, an Indiana basketball player, there are several Indiana basketball players that probably could have profited from their likeness. Romeo Langford, Juwan Morgan. There's probably a couple of other guys that may fall into that category because they're, quote, Indiana basketball players. At Penn State, probably the one guy would be Lamar Stevens.
Right.
Maybe Josh Reeves could have in a small way, but Lamar Stevens.
But, I mean, every team can make money.
Right, right. Football... Only a few guys, despite what people think, and maybe a volleyball player could, maybe a one, but the number would end up being, in my opinion, somewhere between 7 and 15 on a campus at any given time that could really make some legit cash. Maybe you're a business, you want to have the entire offensive line come down and sign autographs. Okay, so they could get a little coin doing that.
But at this point, it doesn't even have to be legit. Like, I think even from a smaller standpoint, like if you have a kid who is, like you said, an offensive lineman who's never going to go onto the NFL for, I don't know, West Virginia, you know, just random, and or even a wide receiver who is never going to play for the NFL but was just good enough to be recognized, you know. If he gets an extra few hundred dollars from an advertisement he does locally, that's awesome. That's, to me, that's what it should be. That should be okay. You know what I'm saying? Like, that's.
Oh,
and I know
you
agree. I know.
But, I'm with you.
But I'm just
I'm
saying
you.
That's just,
I also,
you know.
I also think, as I pointed out in the previous hour, I said, as time goes, I'm very confident in saying that as time goes, you're actually going to get fewer athletes being able to profit from, quote, likeness, because guess what a business wants? A business wants return on, quote, the advertising of it. They want a return. And if they're sitting there and say, Chris Elio, superstar running back, and I decide to pay Chris Elio, superstar running back, X amount. And then after a year, I'm looking at my sales numbers, and they're exactly the same, but my expenses are higher because I'm paying Chris Elio, superstar running back. Well, if they're still the same, I'm sitting there saying, geez, is this worth it?
Well, yeah, there's no guarantee. I mean, you know, you don't know what it's going to do next year. You know what I'm saying? Like, that's, you can't even predict that, though.
I mean, my prediction is that's why I think you're going to see, as time goes, fewer and fewer, actually. Like, take, for example, and on market means something, too. Market means something. So let's take USC football. In the 2000s, when USC was the only game in town football-wise, like Matt Leinart, Reggie Bush, Lindale White, they all could have, right? But look at today. Where's USC football going to fit in? You've got the Rams, the Lakers, the Dodgers, the Clippers.
They only care
the Kings,
about basketball.
The
out there,
Chargers. So. Yeah, but I'm saying, though, I haven't even gotten to USC yet.
Right.
I'm not even there yet.
No, they only. Unless you're a Laker, they don't give a damn. Or UCLA. Right. They don't care. They just don't care.
Hey. Okay. Hey, you know what? This has been so fascinating. We took it right to the end of the show.
Agreed.
We will talk to you tomorrow on News Radio 1070 WKOK.